Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and news and topics and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining me today is guest co-host Lynn Ware Peak, who is on what hour number 8 you've been on air
since 6 a.m. this morning.
Really?
That's right.
Okay.
But mostly I've been tracking Santa.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last time I checked, he was in Singapore.
He was in Singapore? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And by the time we're done, he'll be somewhere
Australia
west
or
of
wait.
That, which will be somewhere in...
Yeah. Probably Thailand. Australia, New Zealand.
Myanmar.
Oh, no. West of that. Sorry.
Bangladesh. Okay. Well, we'll get to that a little bit later. Updates on Santa. We're here to talk with outgoing mayor of Park City, Dana Williams, who's kind enough to join us in the studio to talk about his 12 years. That's right. Yeah, that's the right face for that. 12 years as mayor of this fair town. And we're going to focus on environmental issues. You've done many things during those 12 years. Before we get to your environmental legacy with respect to this town, let's talk about what happened yesterday, because that was really big. That was national news, wasn't it?
It was huge news. And, you know, I was saying, Mayor Williams, that this may have been one of the most significant, well, 12-hour periods of your entire 12-year term. Certainly one of the most emotional. You married some 25 couples in same-sex wedding ceremonies at the Summit County Courthouse yesterday, beginning at 8 a.m.
Yeah, it was... You know, it was so emotional. It was just this wonderful array of people who were so excited. And you know, as someone who kind of grew up during the civil rights era and Vietnam and all these issues of people's personal freedoms and everything else, to see this, the joy, I mean, just the sheer joy in people's faces of what they finally were allowed to do. And I was, like I was saying earlier, every single wedding had a different story, and they were intense, and there was families, and just the emotion that was in that room was something I'll certainly never forget. And, you know, I mean, I do know those vows by heart, but, you know, I lost it 4 or 5 times during the ceremonies looking at people, because you could just see this huge weight that was taken off of their shoulders, and there was children around and flowers in the room. And I think Claudia McMullen, the county councilor, cried 25 times in a row. And and so, you know, I'm proud of what's happened. I think that you know, it was great getting a shout out from Rachel Maddow on her show last night. I wrote her this morning before I came on, just thanking her for something that, you know, this is one of those who'd have thunk it moments, and who knows where it's going to go. But, you know, if there is a stay, or if this it gets overturned somehow, you know, in states that this has happened, they have acknowledged the weddings that did happen. So I'm certainly hopeful that that happens. But, you know, It was just a great experience, so I was honored to participate.
And some 900 wedding ceremonies have been performed since Judge Robert Shelby's ruling on Friday. Now, not everyone's happy about this. In fact, a large body of Utahns are not. In 2004, voters unanimously approved a continued ban on gay marriage. And, you know, some people are saying, well, this is one judge's opinion, his interpretation of the law. What do you think about that?
Well, one, with all due respect, I beg to differ with you on unanimous. It was about roughly a 65-35% vote.
Majority, sorry.
Yes, statewide, although exactly the opposite in Summit County. It was about 65-35 against Proposition 3 in Summit County and Grand County, if I remember correctly. We were the two counties that did not approve it. You know, again, you know, I saw the Deseret News the other day, and the title on the front page of the paper said "Judicial Tyranny," and you know, I read that and just went, you know, when a judge is interpreting the Constitution, I'm not sure that that's tyranny, and you know, these laws have been challenged in a lot of states and been defeated, and so, you know, I think it just goes to as I was talking about in council Thursday night. We are an inclusive town. We have talked for years. We've worked with Equality Utah about issues associated with discrimination on housing or employment. And so this is kind of a culmination of just saying, you know, you're either on the bus or off the bus discrimination-wise. And it either goes to everybody or nobody, in my opinion. And so to me, this is just another one of those walls that comes tumbling down that I was proud to be here to be part of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. How many couples did you marry again?
25, and then I have another one in an hour or so.
Okay. And maybe more, of course.
Maybe. I definitely am making myself available. And
if this ruling gets overturned or if it gets stayed, those marriages are bound. They're locked in.
That's not guaranteed. In states that it has happened, they have. So as far as I'm aware, they have honored folks that got married while it was legal. So we'll see what happens.
Now, where there was a unanimous vote was on city council last Thursday night when you, in your final city council meeting that you would preside over, asked city council to support you in requesting that staff look into making Park City the first municipality in Utah to allow gay marriage. Is that a reality, or was that what was that? Do you think it could happen? And does what's happened over the last 4 days maybe change that?
Well, it was, I mean, one, that was just so bizarre to bring that up on Thursday night, and then Friday morning the Prop 3 gets thrown out. So I did have a few calls about, do you know the judge? Did he call you? Right. Anything else? No, it was just one of those things that, you know, definitely I'm at the point now where there's reflection going on over the last 12 years. And it was one of those things that just bothered me that we had not progressed enough, not as us as a city, but that we had not progressed enough as a society that this is something that just becomes a non-issue. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to bring it up. I wasn't really sure where it would go. In terms of looking at should the city have enjoined themselves in that lawsuit? And that's kind of where I was going, was that we need a municipality to step up and join these folks that had the guts to take on Proposition 3. Anyway, I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
And awesome.
Like Lynn said, this was one of the most important things you did. In your 12
in terms it's of historical 11, significance.
Like 11 years, 11 months, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
6 hours. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, and I mean, I do – there's been so many things, I think, in 12 years that personally I would consider as yes. monumental things. And yeah. so which segue. Yeah.
Well, exactly. You know, I had this great segue I was thinking of into
right
environmental
ahead.
Issues. Is I was thinking between your request to counsel and then Judge Robert Shelby's ruling, I was going to suggest, and I forget what the theory is called, but it's something like the 100th monkey theory, where they found that, you know, monkeys living on diverse islands that have absolutely no contact with each other suddenly evolve to do this, to perform the same new task. And it is about a collective consciousness, right. perhaps it's quantum physics, perhaps it's just evolving the evolution of civil rights. Not in the monkey's case, but well, maybe in the monkey's case too.
Not sure how to respond to that, Lynn.
Okay. There's my segue. Do you have a better segue than that?
we'll try.
Go ahead.
Here's mine. I mean, 12 years ago, you came into office, 2002,
mm-hmm.
correct? Let's talk about your environmental programs. When you came into office, what did you see as some of your goals and objectives with respect to the environment?
Sure. You know, for about 10 years before I took office, I'd been involved with a citizens group in town that was talking about everything from open space to affordable housing, environmental cleanup. I'd sat on the committee, the stakeholders committee for the EPA and cleanup here for 10 years. And aside from the transit center site, the surplus sites in the city had not been cleaned up. Nothing had happened. And so that was kind of one of the first and foremost things was we need to face these problems that we have in terms of soils mitigations mm-hmm. in the city. And we need to return the phone calls to the EPA, get this done, and actually come up with game plans for mitigating those surplus sites within the city. You know, the open space movement we were still trying to debate what the actual meaning of open space was back then so that it could be codified. And That actually took a couple of years, not as long as determining the table during the Vietnam War on the table for negotiations, yes. How it would be shaped. But it was like, if there's mechanical uses on the property, is it really open space? And all these different things is, Park City Mountain Resort, is that technically open space? Is a golf course open space? So that kind of got whittled down through the first COSAC groups, which started before I was in. The advancing of open space and the philosophy that, during the late 80s and 90s, what we were told was our savior in this area is going to be golf courses. And I think lots of us realized that that's not necessarily going to be true, and that could we get to the point where open space was actually considered as valuable, and would that increase property values for people that lived around open spaces compared to a golf course? And what we found out was – hell yes, that was true. And so, I think that the community was demanding certain things in terms of go bigger here. And so, to a certain extent, I had quite a roadmap right when I got here on things to do. Mm-hmm. The first we got another bond passed, so we had the third bond. And then as of now, we have a permanent source through the sales tax increase, permanent source for open space funds. We did kind of crunch some of the numbers, and we had about 2,000 acres of open space and about 50 miles of trails when I took office, and now we have 10,000 acres of open space and 400 miles of trails. Just 5 months ago, I got to speak in China about economic development based on not building anything, and how as a community we have been able to bring our summer economy up through the preservation of land. And there is – it's a factual, non-arguable point that when I took office, 80% of our business as a city happened in 100 days in the winter, and that not a sustainable plan. And now we've gotten to about 65-35, mm-hmm. and my goal was 60-40. So I'm right. close enough, and 65% is about what my grade point average was. So yeah. I'm happy with that.
I'm comfortable with that. Yeah. And we still only have two golf courses.
Correct.
That's a really interesting thing. That's how the perspective was back then. That golf courses were open space. In many ways, you might know better that in so many ways, golf courses are very biologically sterile environments.
Correct.
They look pretty. But they're biologically they're not diverse at all. They're very monoculture environments.
Right.
So, but that's interesting. The golf course and the counterintuitive nature that if we leave things as they are, we can actually our economy actually benefits from that.
Yeah, so yeah. That's one of those Tao of Duh moments. And so anyway, I think we were kind of hitting and missing. Oh, let's put some solar panels here. Let's do this. Let's do that. And what we determined was we really needed to create a department in the city that would be progressive in terms of looking at that. So that was kind of the evolution of the sustainability department, which is not just environmental issues. Mm-hmm. It has to do with our economy and the community, and so a wider range of things. But certainly the environmental part of that was very, very big.
Sure.
So first and foremost was let's tackle the environmental problems that we have. Two, we had had a major amount of development that was approved that did not have water. And we have spent $45 million during my tenure on water development in the area. That was a very difficult thing. We've now made this regional water deal that I think secures us. We don't need to get into the arguments of putting a lake in the middle of Round Valley. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's all but a dead issue. Mm-hmm. Because of the partnerships that are now being done between the water companies and Weber Basin. But
now, wouldn't some people say that that's exactly why that partnership was created? I have heard this is so that eventually they can all come and that Round Valley Reservoir would be built and it could benefit all the partners of that.
I don't think so. I think Round Valley is the very bottom thing. And one of the things I think we needed to look at was we have a responsibility to our city first. And yes, regionalization is great, and there's negotiations going on lots of regional topics. But the idea that we take care of our community first and that we do not have the ability to store the amount of water that we need, and we can't keep cutting off the tops of hills and putting million-gallon tanks in them. So as much as it was almost anathema to me that we would take open space and flood it, the other side of the coin was I had a responsibility to look at how do we create a sustainable water program here. Right. The idea that that lake could have fed streams when flows are low, that we could protect fish habitat and those type of things was pretty interesting. But it was also kind of against everything I ever stood for on creating conservation easements. So a very tough issue. But to me, it's kind of way down on the list.
You know, I heard Deer Valley President Bob Wheaton one day say that snowmaking is actually a very effective reservoir for water because it just stays up there all winter and then it flows down. But there is that question, and I think that's why the Round Valley thing came up, about how do you capture the water that's otherwise going to flow downstream and we're going to lose it.
Correct. Right. And that's, you know, it is effective in terms of staying up on the hill, but as soon as it melts, it goes right by us because we don't have the ability to store it. So, you know, one of the very first things that we needed to tackle was the prospector. At that time, the soils ordinance was mostly in the prospector area. And I went to the city manager at the time, Tom Backley, and I said, why don't we pay people to come into compliance with the soils ordinance, because we're not getting much activity towards this, and we still have hundreds and hundreds of lots that are not in compliance with the EPA. And he said, you know, we've never done this and everything else. And I said, I'm talking $500. I'm talking, you know, two dump trucks full of topsoil. And everyone kind of freaked out, and it's, well, let's see what happens. And so as soon as we did it, that year we had 78 homes come into compliance. So for $38,000, we got the EPA coming back and saying, you know what, you're handling this. We're going to archive Prospector. It's no longer on the surplus list. And we're going to let the city handle this program because it's working. And so, again, these things that are – one, that stakeholder committee was – awesome. I think it worked together. It wasn't about pointing fingers and who's going to be responsible. And that's shifted a lot over the last several years, because we no longer have a stakeholders committee. We have a project manager that is more has been more regulatory based and SmackDown based. And we have a new surplus site that was created 2 years ago, which is from the ponds in Prospector out to Richardson Flats and then all the way out I-80. So the new plan has cost us over $5 million in the last year because the EPA took over the repository that was a contract between the city and United Park Mines. They busted our contract to be able to put mine waste, their future cleanup, into the repository that was built for the city.
Right.
Which means we have to haul to Safe Harbors down in Tooele. And so it's costing us a lot of money.
A lot of money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're speaking with outgoing Mayor Dana Williams. We're going to talk more with you when we come back. We'll touch
the rapid fire session.
Rapid fire sessions all on alternative energy and building codes, air quality.
Mosquitoes.
We're going to get to mosquitoes. I know one of your favorite topics. and also what challenges there remains for the city. It's This Green Earth, and we'll be back right after these words from our underwriter. Stay tuned.
Yahoo! Powder Days are on the way. Another holiday is fast approaching at Park City Nursery. We're happy to celebrate the season with KPCW, offering a selection of fresh, field-grown Christmas trees, handmade wreaths and garlands, decorations, candles, and gardening gifts. A continued family tradition since 1983. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com.
At Intermountain Park City Spine and Pain Clinic, the pain management doctor and providers understand severe muscle tension pain. If you have a deep, unending muscle pain or pain that keeps you up at night, Dr. Andy Talbot and his highly experienced team can help. They see patients who, through repetitive motion at work or play, have pain that will not go away. His appointment number is 435-658-7470. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Park City Restore is grateful for the many hands that have made it successful. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available locally through Habitat for Humanity. Plus, volunteering at the ReStore gives you a first look at the amazing treasures donated for resale. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show here on KPCW, addressing environmental issues and news items and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining me this week is guest co-host Lynn Ware Peake and our big guest, one of our big guests of the year. It took me all year to finally get a really good guest, Dana Williams, outgoing mayor of Park City. Thanks for joining us. In the first part of our conversation, we talked a bit about sustainability and creating the sustainability division or department in the city and what that's about. We talked about open space, water supply, of course, a huge issue, and we'll probably get back to that as we go forward. Let's talk a little bit, move on to concepts of energy.
Yeah.
Energy conservation, alternative energy,
sure.
You know, generating electricity or natural gas or transportation fuel. What's been done there?
Well, one of the first things, and it took a couple of years, and the new city manager, Diane Foster, said that I was always really good about talking my ideas into reality, that I just talked about them so much that eventually we just did them. And the biofuel program with the bus system was one of the first ones, and that was kind of early on. We are still the only major biofuels transportation system in the Rockies, and and my feeling about it has changed over time because of the effects on food and converting corn and soy into fuel and its effect on the world food price and everything else. But at the time, it was, there's definitely a definable NOx reduction, mm-hmm. and maybe not as much in the SOx part, but definitely the NOx part. And the idea of doing that and just saying, we're going to embrace some of these things and test them out. And it worked. It took a couple of years to get up and going. We had gelling issues with it's one of those cases where gelling is not
right.
good.
In these and, very cold temperatures.
Yeah. And so, we are still using the biofuel now, but we're also, as has been reported lately, they're looking at the potential of natural gas or some of these new power induction things. You know, we had looked at doing that a few years ago. That program didn't actually come to fruition, but the technology in it is advancing. So remember, we were looking at putting strips in the street that the bus would drive over it and get charged. You know, now I think as we move forward, we're going to be looking at these things can be built into the roof at the transit center. And as the bus pulls in, batteries can be charged. These are kind of the ongoing things that will be looked at.
Let's talk a little bit about fuel before you go on.
Okay.
And, there has been this recent conversation at City Hall about maybe it was just one study done and taken from somewhere up in the Cache Valley, Logan area. Citing that diesel, as it turns out, if you look at it overall, I believe, carbon footprint overall in terms of extraction, transportation, and emissions is actually lower than compressed natural gas. Now, people disagree with that. I think one of those people is my co-host, Chris Cherniak, an environmental engineer. So I'd like to talk
a
little bit
skeptic
about
it, right.
that. I mean, so much has come into the news with fracking and the dangers to the people who live in the area, among
right.
other things, the extraction, not to mention all these tankers that are populating Highway 40 at an ever-increasing and alarming rate.
That's oil. Which gets converted to diesel.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess to me, one, I think the dialogue's great. in terms of looking at it. And I think, you know, I always think that, you know, good things come out of conflicting ideas. And so the idea that the city and the county, who are joined at the hip in terms of the transportation system, are going to be taking some time to look at these things, is a great idea.
Yeah.
So I'm not really too concerned about what's the right way to go or what my particular opinion is, because I think smarter minds than mine will kind of figure out what the best part of that is. But, I mean, you're correct. We saw that there was – based on one criteria, the carbon footprint of diesel was lower than natural gas. Totally debatable from what I can tell. And so but I think that's one of the things in terms of trying to be progressive and trying to look at what's this technology? Should we try this? Where should we invest in these different things? Has been one of the things that we were trying to do early on. And then what we realized was, wait a minute, let's go back and look at carbon. And rather than trying these hit-and-miss projects, why don't we do the carbon footprint of the city, do the carbon footprint of the government, see where the low-hanging fruit is in terms of creating efficiencies. The first thing was the government. We did ours. We work with Johnson Controls that came in. And they had an amazing program that if they come up with a list of things and you do them and you don't achieve the reductions, you don't pay them for the work they did. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. So they came in with an idea that would cost a little over $1 million, and we could lower the government's footprint by 14% in 90 days. And we did it. And it worked.
Wow.
And so – but we also realized that then a new water plant came online. So that upped our carbon footprint. And I think that's the awareness about everything – has an effect. And and so when you're trying to do great things in one area, bang, all of a sudden something else comes on. The montage comes online, or all these things that are, even though they are a LEED building, which is fantastic, energy consumption in the city went up a lot with that. So, you know, those things, the idea that these are always being turned around, I think is great.
But what was critical there is that you were wasting less. You were gaining in efficiencies. Maybe that, you know, your net consumption was going up, but you were wasting less. And Johnson Controls came in and saw opportunities for you.
Correct.
To be more efficient with the energy required, and that's critical. I mean, whether it's systems or materials or equipment or behavior,
right?
That you know the consultant points out, and that the city. You know,
right.
Addresses.
And I think that's one of the things as I'm leaving that I'm so extremely proud of is that, you know, when you walk around in City Hall now, aside from seeing like Nerf balls and hula hoops and babies and puppies, because it's such a young staff.
I got to go there.
It's very fun. Okay. But the other thing is that these younger folks, it's such a part of their dynamic and their upbringing that they automatically are thinking in terms of those things. So, you know, if we're pumping water uphill, oh, what can we do on the downhill side?
Right.
And so and that's one of the new projects coming is the water turbines. And when we first brought it up 4 or 5 years ago, we were told by engineers, wait, because the technology, so much money is being put into the R&D on water turbines that whatever you put in now is going to be obsolete within 36 months. So wait a while. And, you know, so right now we're just planning what's going to happen. We've got to run water from the Spiro Tunnel, the Judge Tunnel in Daly Canyon over to the Spiro where Silver Star is. And that turbine there, from what we're looking at, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 140 houses worth of power that will generate from a gravity flow, no energy into it. So it is a net negative carbon project. And I think those kind of things are just awesome in terms of the way we look at things. So,
how much energy does that offset, do you know, that downhill course? And you're saying it could generate electricity for so many homes, but the reality is that you have to pump water from the Quinns water station back up. So do you know the particular offset?
We're looking at the some of the newer plans we might not be pumping back from Quinns. You know, one of the things that we're looking at is because you have two such major sources of water with a Judge and the Spiro happening going to the Spiro, Should there be a separate treatment facility there so that we have a treatment facility for the water that's imported either through Weber Basin, Summit Water, and the partnership that goes to Quinns, the Rockport water goes to Quinns, and then the internal water from Judge and Spiro could be treated at Spiro and not be sent out to Quinns and then pumped back.
Mm.
And so that's one of the options.
Okay. If you just joined us again, we're speaking with outgoing Mayor Dana Williams, talking about his 12 years in office and focusing on his environmental programs and legacies. Lots of things that you did get done. Let's ask you, in 12 years, there may have been some other things that you would have liked to have seen get done and didn't happen for one reason or another. What were some of those challenges?
I think a couple of the – you know, one of the big ones was that you know, we were instrumental in trying to get the curbside recycling program going. And it's up and running. And then from the best we can tell, about 3 in 10 people that have access to it use it.
Hmm.
And that's just pathetic. It's just pathetic. And the idea that we're getting 30% of our waste stream into recycling is disgusting. And so, you know, we've always been carrot approach to things and soft things. And it's you know, it's kind of like the anti-idling thing, which, I mean, the state came in and said you can't have a law on it anyway. But that we try to do things through education. I'm certainly to the point that on some of these things, I would love to see regulatory smackdown. If you have that trash can that is going straight to the dump and it's overflowing with cardboard, you should be cited.
Right.
Period. And, you know, when we did the visioning our citizenry is saying, you know, go bigger. We want definable environmental programs. We do not want to be accused of greenwashing, everything else. Well, people have to step up too. It can't be just the government doing things.
Exactly.
Is part of greenwashing in essence also creating ordinances but not enforcing them? I mean, would that be an argument for you to use the carrot approach? Because, you know, there is the anti-idling ordinance. You can be ticketed for idling your car here, but there's no enforcement. Enforcement costs money. So, you know, maybe we want citizens to enforce, but losing, you know, creating, yes, it's true, creating ordinances and then not enforcing it loses credibility.
I think that's possible. I think you know, what really brings us home, a few weeks ago I got to speak at a debate in Salt Lake for kids, middle school kids, and their topic was plastic bags. And so I had 3 segments of 150 kids each, and we were talking about cloth bags, and we were talking about different things, and the parents are in the back of the room shaking their heads no at me and what I was saying. And the final group of kids, I had 30 kids from Park City, the school district there. And I said, and each one of them, I said, how many of you use cloth bags? The first 2 groups, none. And then the third group, 30 kids raised their hands, and they were all our kids. And it was like, wait a minute, we never passed a law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we created the dialogue that it was something that people started thinking of. So trying to change behavior through just the education of it without codifying it does mean something, and it does make a change. But with that said, when we give options to people and they choose not to take them, but then they want to talk about how environmentally safe we are or how progressive we are, they've got to participate too.
Yeah. I mean, that's again, it's such environmental awareness, environmental stewardship is about personal responsibility, personal behavior changes.
Right.
You know, and you can create ordinances. The no idling thing's fantastic.
Right.
Thanks to the efforts of Mary McIntyre and others who helped to bring that resolution together.
Right.
But to enforce it is really a challenge. It's just you've got to compel people to
right.
see the value of that.
Right.
You know, and so recycling is another thing. And
there's a few things, you know, I mean, one of the big pluses, and I'm by God, I'm going to get mosquitoes in before we're done here. But, you know, about 10 years ago, because of West Nile, Park City got brought into the mosquito abatement area. We pay about 60% of the cost of the mosquito abatement program is paid for out of Park City. We get about 5% of the control because we don't have a lot of standing water in this area, which doesn't really matter. But it was a Eastern Summit County group And they wanted two people from the city that had pest control licenses at some time in their careers. And Pace Erickson from the Roads Department had one, and nobody else except me. So I said, I'll be on this.
Your talents are diverse.
Yeah, and I had minored in pest control in college, and so I went on this board. It was a very Eastern Summit County group. But as we started talking about new types of controls for mosquitoes, the number one thing that kept surfacing was biological control and how you can use hormones to control mosquitoes while they're still in the water. That once they hit the air, then the control method has to go up. And so then organophosphates tend to be used more when it's an adult. And so we've, over the years, we have morphed farther and farther into using these organic biological pest controls. And this last year in Summit County was the first time that 100% of the mosquito control for the year was done biologically.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well done.
And, yeah.
Although I will say that this administration, 12 years, has done nothing to help the honeybee in this county.
Correct. And but we are not using –
the most important
there is – as far insect. As I'm aware, there is no groups that are using nicotinoids.
Neonicotinoids? Okay.
Yes. Right. Thank you. So I am up on the reading
and
on
you
that.
Actually know the word, so thank you very much.
You're that welcome.
That puts you well in and of itself.
Okay, we've got credit. A few more minutes. We need to wrap up. So that's what you've done, some of the challenges you faced in trying to get other things done. What do you think is looking ahead? What are some of the environmental challenges for Park City?
One of the things I would love to see is again, going back to we've set the framework in terms of knowing where our carbon usage is. Now I'd love to see for us to really truly do offsets. And, you know, we have several ski areas that we all kind of compete with each other and everything. It's very friendly. And we have a few that refer to themselves as 100% renewable energy communities. And they write a check for RECs,
offsets. Wetlands and forests and
correct.
Some other part
but
of
they're,
the world.
They're paying to be able to say we're offsetting through paying money for it. Yeah. And RECs are a great thing. I'm not being disrespectful of them. But I want to see more on-the-ground things. Rocky Mountain Power is going to be looking over the next few years at creating 3 5-megawatt solar arrays in the state of Utah. And we said, yes, please. We'd love to look at possibly doing one here.
Would that be placed on some of our open space?
Not that it's protected. No, it would not be placed on open space. The conversion of brownfields, as Richardson Flats gets capped, that might be an area. Mm-hmm. Some of the land the city and the county own, like the Triangle parcel, could be looked at. But I would like to actually see us moving forward in terms of creating renewable energy projects here that truly offset our carbon footprint. One of the other things that's really exciting has been the advance in the technology on small-scale wind, residential wind. And I have one job offer coming up that is actually with a small residential wind company. And these are small turbines that sit on an 8-foot pole on your house. They can create at 3 miles an hour up to 12 kilowatts of power a day. The average house uses 16. So there's for $3,500, there's an 80% offset to your house.
Right.
And we do have some zones in the city that are approved for them right now. So I would like to see that enhanced. But, I think, when everything is said and done, if we put 8 1.2 megawatt turbines on the top of the mountains here, we could offset 100% of our carbon footprint. But nobody wants to see them.
No.
And so we're trying to look at that. And that's always a tough thing in terms of, well, how serious are we? And so for a $10 million investment, technically we could offset 100% of our carbon, but we don't want to see it. And so that's a tough offset.
There you go.
And so, again, going back to the carrot approach and the small scale, looking at creating small scale wind, looking at trying to get a larger solar array built in Western Summit County, those are a couple of the biggies I think we should do.
And, of course, light rail from airport to
I'm not I've heard a lot of talk about that. I am not sure that saves us anything.
Okay.
What I am sure is that population follows that.
Okay.
And that the Park City community as we know it, if we bring light rail here, will be gone. because the population follows that. If it's only 15 minutes on light rail to get from the Salt Lake Valley to Park City, tens of thousands of people will start wanting to get up here. And so I want to be really careful, and I'm not against other forms of transportation, but I think we have a lot of steps before that.
And that's going to be an issue going forward for the next
administration. So I'll be a citizen activist on those issues.
Congratulations. Well, join us, and you can join us on the show anytime.
Great. Thanks.
Mayor Dana Williams from Park City. When is your last day?
Sometime between the 5th and the 9th.
You're not sure? They haven't told you yet.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't gotten that text message.
In the meantime, you'll continue to marry people.
Yes. Anybody.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Anybody starting within an hour?
Half an hour. I've got another
one. All right. We'll let you get over there and get ready for that.
Thanks.
Thanks again for joining us.
And thanks for your 12 years of stellar service.
Thanks. It's been awesome.
Fantastic. All right. Let's take another quick break for some underwriters. We come back. We got another
Park
guest.
City
Park
Lacrosse City Lacrosse team.
And hopefully a couple news items. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage pickup. Help make your holiday season a greener one this year. Gift boxes, wrapping paper, cards, junk mail, magazines, catalogs, plastic, and aluminum beverage containers are all recyclable. Happy holidays, Summit County. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Get a jump on the new year. No resolution needed with the PC Marks Winter Workout Special.
Now through January 15th, receive 20% off our 1 and 3 month facility passes. Enjoy our indoor track, weights, cardio, gymnasium, and more. For more information, visit us online at parkcityrecreation.org or call 615-5400.
A jump on the new year, no resolution needed. PC Mark, a higher degree of play.
The Park City Mark is a nonprofit organization.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
Join us for Cool Science Radio, Thursdays at 9 a.m.
From the discovery of new dinosaurs to the science of an avalanche.
From the secret technology behind Facebook to nanotechnology.
Deciphering science and tech in an entertaining, amusing, and accessible way.
It's Cool Science Radio. If we understand it, so can you.
Thursdays at 9 a.m., only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Brought to you by Peake Art and Frame.
And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, sitting in for Nell Larson today. I'm joined by co-host Chris Cherniak. And Park City Lacrosse team, I've got a couple members of that team, along with one of the members of the Board of Trustees. I have Katie Mealy, along with Kenna Tixon. And they are going to go around to any resident in Park City. You have to sign up online, and they'll grab your Christmas tree that, in my case, mine's already dead. I've had it about 10 days.
Well, that
so I want to ask you about that. This is one of the subjects we're going to talk about. So Katie and Kenna, welcome to you. And
you.
Steve Gordon, my buddy.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. So you've done this for how many years?
We've done it for all of the Park City years. I think it's been about 13, is that right?
She's looking at me as though I know.
Well, you've been around a lot longer than...
I'm new to the board. My daughter's a freshman. These girls have plowed the trail.
It's a long-time fundraiser for the Park City Lacrosse team. It's only $25 to get them to come and pick up your Christmas tree.
Okay.
It's a great fundraiser. What, Katie, do you do with the money, and how much about do you expect to raise?
Well, with the money, we're a non-sanctioned sport, so all the money that we use has to be member fees or fundraisers that we use, and the money will go to our program, and it will go into all of our uniforms and
okay, suits. So I have to go online. Where am I going online?
ParkCityLacrosse.org.
And then I sign up there, and it costs me $25,
yes.
And then I set a day that you're going to come and pick it up?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And then I just put it outside?
Yeah, you have to have your tree waiting outside for us to come get it.
Okay. And you just grab it.
Mm-hmm.
Ornaments off.
Yeah,
lights
no
off.
Ornaments.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, wait. If I pay extra, can you come inside and get it? Is that not one of the options?
No,
that's not something that you can upsell.
I think we can negotiate that.
Okay. That's a good point. So what is done with the trees?
The trees are gone to the Swanner Nature Preserve, and they are turned into mulch, so that is reused and used for.
Okay. All right. So they're not just being gathered and then hauled off to the landfill or otherwise. They're being reused. And that's the environmentally sound thing to do. That's why we wanted you on the show to showcase that.
Yeah,
so how many trees do you pick up a year? How many have trees did?
Last year we did about 180 trees around town. So we do it through all of the different neighborhoods except for like Promontory and I think it was the Summit Park. So. Okay.
And Jordanelle.
And Jordanelle area. Okay. So.
Good.
Okay. So in previous years, I know back by the North 40 field, back by Treasure Mountain there, that's where you could drop your own Christmas tree if you were going. And I thought that's where the lacrosse team took them to. Am I mistaken on that? Now they're going to Swanner Eco Center. Is there a mulcher out there or something?
What we do is we collect we go into little groups and we collect all the trees that are into the driveways onto their trailers, and we bring them to certain spots around town, usually over by the North 40, and they grind up the trees and they just make the mulch there. So.
Okay, so how many days will this program run?
We have two pickup dates, which is January 4th and 5th. This is Saturday and Sunday, and January 11th and 12th, which is also a Saturday and Sunday. So we'll go around those two different days and pick up everyone's trees.
Okay, so I can sign up anytime between now and that time frame.
We actually have a deadline to sign up, which is January 2nd.
Okay, that's important. All right, well, we gotta wrap up. One more time, go online to?
ParkCityLacrosse.org.
Okay, and sign up, $25, pick up your tree.
I have one final burning question.
Okay.
Do you ever go, did you do this last year, Kenna?
Yes.
Okay, do you ever pick up a tree that is still living? Because I'm hung up on my 10-day-old tree that I've watered faithfully, religiously, and it's dead. As can be. Do you ever pick one up that's still alive?
We have, actually. I mean, there's a lot of good trees.
We'll get some advice from the owners of the live trees that we can
Lynn, you got to
get back to me on that.
That's a whole separate topic.
I know.
Your tree issues. Maybe you can cover that tomorrow on Mountain Life.
Perhaps.
Okay. All right. Well, we want to thank you guys for coming in and talking, sharing that with us. It's a great idea. It's a great program. And it's the environmentally right thing to do with your Christmas tree if you have no other plans. So let's take another quick break for an underwriter. When we come back, we'll start to wrap up and try to squeeze in a couple of news items. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Join KPCW every weekday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. for the latest news in town and around the world. Trusted news anchor Leslie Thatcher delivers local news as well as broadcasts of NPR News, Marketplace, and national stories. Morning Edition with Leslie Thatcher, sponsored by Promontory the Ranch Club, Nexus IT, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, and Deer Valley Resort.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Lynn Ware-Peak. Want to get a news item in. We got a few minutes. Real quick, November 2013, well, last month.
This year, 2013, it's about over.
Exactly, but November was the warmest November ever recorded since records began to be collected on a global basis, okay? And this goes back to 1880. So we've had basically 133 Novembers since 1880, right? And this was the warmest November ever documented, again, on a global basis, weather stations around the world.
Question for you. Wasn't November 2012 the now second warmest
it was right
in
up
history?
There.
It was.
It was right up in the top five or so. So, again, this year, if December continues with this similar trend, this year will be probably somewhere in the top three or four warmest years ever documented on a global scale.
Okay. Interesting. So, and I just want to make one quick comment on that, is that we are oftentimes quite myopic. That I think November was very freezing cold here, and I think my power bill can attest to that.
It was cold.
And so we lose sight of what's going on a global basis.
Yes. And that's the issue. This is not a local issue. It's a global issue. And we're going to be talking more about all the weather and climate with Brian McInerney next week. He is my special guest. At the end of the year, he's going to be talking about weather and climate. Him and I for practically the entire show. What's on your show tomorrow?
Actually, tomorrow being Christmas Day, Tim Henney and I are taking a break from the mountain life. And also,
so you only have three guests tomorrow. Is that what you're saying?
No, we will be at home or skiing or whatever we're doing, pondering my dead Christmas tree. And we also will not be back for New Year's Day because that's, again, another holiday. So we're missing the next 2 weeks of the mountain life. But we'll rejoin you January 8th.
With nine guests, I'm sure. I want to thank you, Lynn, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
It was a great conversation with Mayor Williams. Hey, let's, of course, thank our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanity. Restore.
Rocky Mountain Power.
San Francisco Design.
And Prudential Utah Real Estate.
And, of course, you can join us on Facebook, KPCW, This Green Earth. Thanks again, Lynn, and have a happy holiday.
Thank you. We'll same to you.
See you back in January. Join again next week. Brian McInerney, he's the
always
down from the National Weather Service.
He is a
everything
great
about
guest.
Weather. That's right.
That guy could make weather seem so interesting.
You're right, and it's all next week. We'll learn more about just how warm this year is going to be. Remember, this is KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City, only in Park City, only on KPCW.